Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and that's Love Will Follow You by George Howard. He was a great saxophonist who died on this day in 1998. Play a little bit of a remembrance to George Howard. We're about to come back to our live program here. To join us here, 410-319-8888. Reminding you, this program, The Mark Steiner Show, is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to Common Core, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education's website, Maryland State Education Association's website, at marylandeducators.org. That's one word, marylandeducators.org. Or you can go to steinershow.org and click on the Maryland State Education Association's banner. It's there. There is a film that will have one of its many premieres here in Baltimore a week from Sunday called Live Youngblood, which is a very powerful, I want to say stark, but it's really not stark. Stark in that what it lays out for the public. Look at violence and death affecting our young people here in Baltimore. It talks, he hears from parents, hears from young people themselves, hears from many activists who are working with young people about how to put our hands around this problem. It's very passionately done, well shot, well thought out. Movie is 45 minutes, something you do not want to miss. We are here with the two men who made the film and one of the people who central to that film as a character. Bobby Marvin Holmes, of course, former producer for The Mark Steiner Show, is a co-producer of Live Youngblood. He also works for Youth Advocate, YAP, right? Baltimore Youth Advocate Programs, program committed to helping adjudicated youth return to their community. Justin Gladden, co-producer of Live Youngblood, is general manager of WMJFTD at Towson University. Good to have you both in the studio.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
And Kimberly Armstrong is with a community activist who lost her son, teenage son, to violence, who's featured centrally in this film. And Kimberly, good to have you with us as well.
Good morning.
Good morning. And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. You can also, let me tell you right now, I'll tell this later in the program as well, you can catch the premiere and DVD release of Live Youngblood on Sunday, March the 30th. It's a week from this Sunday, March the 30th, at the Creative Alliance at the Patterson in East Baltimore. Doors open at 3:30. The film screening starts at 4, and a panel discussion follows the screening. More information at liveyoungbloodfilm.com. That's liveyoungbloodfilm.com. That'll be on our website, and we'll be announcing this, of course, during the course of our program next week as a piece of underwriting, so you don't forget to go see this. So, Bobby, Justin, Kimberly, good to have you all here.
Thank you.
Let's take a step backwards, and I'm talking about the genesis of this film, about where it came from and why, and how the two of you hooked up to do this film before we kind of get into the heart and the content of it. Bobby, is it fair to say, Justin, it kind of started here?
It did. Actually, what happened was Bobby Marvin came to me one day and said, we should work together, help, promote our stories across his site, HughVoices.com and the Afro and all. And, it helped me get some experience in journalism and video production. And one day Bobby comes to me and says, man, what do you want to do? What's going on? I said, Bobby, I want to make a film. And then we sat together and thought about Live Young Blood, thought about through all the stories we had done for the Afro and for Hugh Voices. We said, we're not hearing both sides of this story in Baltimore City. So Bobby and I decided to start telling that side.
How'd that come about to you? What do you mean we weren't telling both sides? What were you looking at, Bobby?
Some of the narratives that were coming out of Baltimore seemed to be very one-dimensional. Oftentimes when we hear about Baltimore, we're associated with the mainstream television series, The Wire. And, oftentimes people have a perception of the gloom and doom of Baltimore as if Baltimore is definitely its own defeat. And we want to tell a different story that you may hear from the 10 o'clock news where Jamal got shot on 33rd and Greenmount. But we want to dig a little deeper and tell the story of Jamal. Who he was as a person. He had a mother. He had a sister. He had people in the community that cared about him. He wasn't just this quote unquote evil door, but he was a young man that he had his challenges. He was a complex individual. So we want to humanize the narratives of Baltimore, if you will, and really show the resilience of our youth.
And you open the film with this montage of families holding pictures of their loved ones who were killed. Mothers and fathers together, mothers alone, father alone, family just holding pictures of the people they cared about. And there's a very powerful montage that ends with Kimberly Armstrong's picture with her son, and Kimberly comes on, then come on the screen as you're walking through the neighborhood where her son was killed.
Yes, Mark, we really wanted to tell the impact of violence, that what it does to the family. That's often left out of our stories in the media. We thought, it's a disservice to that person's story, to their personal narrative. So we wanted to show here's what happened after the gunshots. Here's what's happened after the police show up and investigate. You know, families, mothers are forced to deal with this loss for the rest of their lives, a loss that changes them forever. And definitely, you know, that montage of different shots with mothers and fathers and coaches holding up photos of their kids was really a sign to say, okay, we remember them, no matter, you know, even if they had their 30 seconds on TV last night, we will remember them for the rest of our lives, and we are impacted from this loss.
And Kimberly, I mean, you've participated in this work for a long time around youth violence in our community and how to end it and working with families. I mean, I talk a bit about, I mean, A, your participation in this film, but also what you think this film does as somebody who has been working in this ever since your son was murdered.
Well, I think it really does exactly what Bobby just said. It gives you a different side, because a lot of times people, when they hear about, you know, youth or violence, you know, especially particularly predominantly in the African-American community, is that you don't look at the whole picture. When my son was murdered when he was 16, it'll be 10 years this year in September. And his birthday was last Friday. He would have been 26. So you don't, you know, people don't really understand it. I have thought about Eric every single day since he has passed away. So that's 3,650 days that I had thought about him. And not only did he just leave me, he left an older brother. My oldest son will be 30. When he passed away, my youngest daughter was 5 years old, and it really didn't impact her until she was around 11 or 12. And she became really depressed because she knew she had a brother, but really because she started to understand what death really meant, it started to affect her. So it's a long-term of symptoms that happen within our community. And the reason why I really wanted to share my story is because people don't really see the pain. And it's a painful process when you really have to try and get, you don't ever get over of losing a child. You just learn how to cope. Some people cope in different ways. So one of the things I think that I'm hoping that this film could do is really for, I hope some elected officials look at it and understand that we need to start putting money and resources back into the communities to help these people heal.
One of the things I thought about as you were speaking, Kimberly, and I thought about this film again. And folks, let me remind you first, join us here, 410-319-8888. We're live here with our two filmmakers and with Kimberly Armstrong, Bobby Marvin Holmes, and Justin Gladden, who made this incredible film, Live Young Blood. And I saw its first iteration, which was really long, and I've seen now the second iteration, which they really have honed down to a very powerful 45 minutes that just keeps you watching it, and you need to that makes you think. Some very important ways, and it's very moving and well shot and well thought out. It's the kind of thing I encourage people to come see and as much as they can. And one of the things I thought about with this is that, and I heard what Kimberly said about elected officials, but as Kimberly was speaking, as I was looking at the film, kind of this new version of the film that you all did, this shorter version, which is, I think, really tight and powerful. I really mean that as a film, is that middle class and other white people need to see this film, and middle class black folks and everybody else who need to see this film who do not live in the worlds where violence takes place. And I say that because it's the humanity you don't see. Yesterday we had Tyrone West family on this program, and they're still together. They're still fighting for justice for their loved one who was killed in the hands of the police. And, you know, that we have to kind of think about how to change the way things are done so people don't die. There was no reason for a man like Tyrone West to die, whatever, for whatever reason they stopped him. But having said that, one of the things with their being on the air and with the film you're doing is the humanity of people. Because sometimes, especially people of color who are living amidst the violence and are have loved ones killed, are not seen in the same human way as other people in society. That's a hard thing to say, but that's true. And that's part of the thing I think your film... even to think that we happen to think like that and do that is insane.
Right.
Right. That's even a question is insane.
Right.
But it is.
Yeah.
Right?
It makes it easier for people that are outside of the equation to kind of just shrug it off their shoulders. And, you know, going around through different forums online, it's pretty common. It's pretty common for people that are in the middle class, white, black, Hispanic, it doesn't matter, to say, well, you know, they're in the hood. They made those decisions. It's their fault. Or more importantly, that kid, that's just tough luck. You know, you should have, pulled yourself up by your own bootstraps. And that's a lack of empathy. And it's easier for people to say, well, it's their fault, more than to say, you know what, this is a sad thing that needs to be changed.
See, I think there's a misconception, because, Mark, when you say middle class, I consider myself to be middle class. I live in Bel Air, Edison. And, you know, when I bought my home, I assumed it was a pretty decent neighborhood. Most of the people in my, you know, community are working, you know, average class people. And, you know, there was not a whole lot of violence. So I think that people have these different perceptions because of us being African-American and just so happen to be living in Baltimore and somewhat predominantly, you know, urban communities. You know, it's the same, you know, and I really looked at, you know, when this thing happened at Sandy Hook and how, you know, you had a group of people that got together and they decided to ride their bikes all the way to D.C. And, you know, just to bring some awareness and attention around gun violence. And when in Baltimore, you have 200-plus murders every single year, and people don't understand how many people that affect.
Yes.
So if you have 200-plus murders a year consecutively for 10 years, there's 2,000 people that have died and 2,000 people that have left people who are hurt.
Do you want to say something before we go to a clip from the film?
Oh, no. Go right ahead.
So we're going to go to this film. I think this is Imhotep Simba. He's a mentor talking about the realities that happens in many neighborhoods in Baltimore. Let's just pick up this clip from the film.
Not too far from here, I saw a man get killed in front of my face, people selling drugs, people getting stabbed. In this community, all they do is really sell drugs. Like, it's a lot of drug selling. So it's nothing to really, like, come up, be around it your whole life. Then next thing you know, generations and generations, it's like high school. In a sense, like, you got certain generations come up, freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, and you see generations of young people go from just playing sports or hanging out late to really coming up in the ranks, like, becoming dope boys or whatever, because their father are not really there. So the dope boys, in a sense, is like a male role model, which they may think of as a father.
Bobby?
That was Imhotep Simba. That's the story we wanted to tell. Here is a young man that, you know, comes from a single family home. His mom, Miss Jeanette, who's featured in the film, and he struggled. He struggled at a very early age. He was out there, you know, selling drugs age 16, 17, getting locked up. His mother happened to come down and pick him up, getting kicked out of school. But he is a young man, Mark, that decided to change his life around. He decided that this is not the life for me anymore. Even after he saw his best friend stabbed to death in front of his face, he decided, you know what, this is not for me, and I could do better. You know, I have the support. I have folks like my mom and Cameron Miles behind me ready to push me forward. So we followed this young man, you know, through his neighborhood, through school. We was at his high school graduation from Edmondson High School and to his matriculation to Coppin State University. And, you know, he graduated another year from Coppin State University and moving on with his life. But we rarely get to hear these stories that comes out of Baltimore. Usually folks just stop at the fact that, here we go, there's another 16-year-old arrested for drugs, another 16-year-old drops out of school, another 16-year-old doomed to fail. But here's a young man who pulled himself out of ashes. He was, you know, the quote-unquote phoenix of the film, if you will, that definitely wanted to better himself and better his community. And it was a matter of responsibility with Justin and I as media professionals to tell a story that had several dimensions, several perspectives to it that really could really folks could really dig into and get the, as you said before, the humanity from the film.
I'm wondering if the two of you, before we turn back to Kimberly and go to the phones here at 410-319-8888, what did you all learn from this film? Did anything new come to you because of this film? Did something, what came out of it for you as filmmakers, as people who are active in the community, as somebody, and Bobby, you've been working with mentoring kids and working with kids for years. I mean, so what came out of it for the two of you?
For me, Mark, the depth of pain families go through. The scene with Kimberly is pretty rough.
It helps open the film.
A pretty rough scene. Also, you know, and she details what happens. But also, Lystra Ali, another mom in the film who lost her 15-year-old son for violence. Here is a woman that was so impacted by the loss of her son. Her son's favorite color was green. Her son's Rabbi's favorite color was green. Every day, this woman wears green, Mark, whether it's a T-shirt or earrings or a scrunchie in her hair. Every day, this woman wears green. We went to our home to film her. You go in a home, Mark, nothing but green. You in the dining room, living room, there's photos all over the wall. This woman has not let her son go, and she refuses to let her son go. She told us that he was cremated and his ashes are in the urn. She said for a while, she was carrying his urn wherever she went. That is the depth of pain these mothers, these families feel for their loved ones. And it's something that won't let go. It won't just, you know, wake up and like, oh, I'm over it now. Like Snake says, the skin, you just take it off. No, it's not that simple. And one thing also about Lystra, she decided, I'm going to host a birthday party in his honor until whenever. So every year she gets together with family and friends and hosts a birthday party for her dead son. And people just miss those type of stories on a day-to-day basis. Like, wow, I mean, yeah, the guy got shot on Greenmount or that guy got shot on North Avenue. But look what the family has to go through.
Right.
And we miss those stories. So that was the takeaway for me, Mark, that, you know, this is a devastating disease that's definitely crumbling our communities.
For Justin, me, man.
And then I'm going to open the phones right after this.
For me, it was definitely just seeing Baltimore's resolve, you know, to see that, you know, Lystra, after this tragic moment, will have this party. And when, you know, I urge anybody to find out information about it and go, because it's hundreds of people, youth, you know, teenagers, adults out there together celebrating, having a good time. And of course, it's in remembrance of Rara, but it's just, it's also an outlet for people to come and be somewhere safe, you know, to see places like Upton Boxing and the Mentoring Male Teens in the Hood, these organizations that strive to mentor kids and to prevent this kind of thing from happening. And even Kimberly's organization, just feeding people information. Like, basically, Baltimore is not just a city sitting around saying, oh, you know, someone else got shot. Oh, well, hopefully the mayor and the police will do something about it. Or, you know, well, you know, what can I do about it? I don't know. Baltimore is doing something about it. To see how many, I mean, we interviewed a lot of organizations, more so than we could ever put in this film, that are actually fighting to, you know, on all fronts, before and after, and before kids get locked up and after kids get locked up. There's so many organizations out there fighting for our kids, fighting for our youth.
I'm going to probe the things you all said in just a moment and bring Kimberly back in, but let me go to the phones here at 410-319-8888. And DeMond, you're on the air.
Thank you, and concerning your guests, I mean, I think the efforts along with the film is a great tool to attract the minds of many of those who are involved in the destructive behavior. But I think it has been mentioned especially with the young man, from what I heard in the interview, or rather the documentary, that a lot of their context or their examples to look up to, it's just not there. Wherein other communities, individuals are able to look at the Constitution in school and see faces of past presidents that have looked like themselves, or even in modern history, look at individuals who are of some type of success in society who look like themselves. They have a context, most of which, and I am a teacher, most of us who teach, a lot of the time from the material that we offer our children or our students, especially in Baltimore City, there is that missing of identification from the child to that which we are teaching. But I'll just say, and I thank the last speaker for mentioning that Baltimore, even though the media or the individuals will probably try to say that there isn't a cry, there are many organizations out here, you know, that's, you know, walking the streets and making efforts to, one, be an example for malehood and manhood, as well as womanhood, but trying to get the word prior to destructive behavior and even after dealing with the grief. Right. My last statement is, I believe that in order for this problem that we are seeing, not only in Baltimore, but we're seeing in all throughout the country, especially in oppressed or you know, deemed to be oppressed communities, but in most particular black communities and poor communities, what we are seeing is people not having access to organizations by way of those organizations not unifying right. among themselves. I think that in Baltimore, we definitely need a united front against this. But again, I think that if this tool was to be put into DJS and put in front of young brothers and sisters, regardless of color, who have been involved in these types of acts, suffer from these types of acts, or who have friends that are involved in these types of acts, I think it could make a change.
Thank you, Damon. Appreciate your thoughts. And Kimberly, before we went to the phones, I think you were trying to get a word in. Please go ahead.
Yes, you asked what did we really take away from the film.
Mm-hmm.
And what I took away from the film is that we got a whole lot of work to do. One of the reasons why I continue to be in the community and advocate and speak to young people about violence and how it affects the families is because a lot of times people don't, especially young people, what I realized when Art passed away, when his friends and, you know, started coming around the house a little bit more because they were concerned about me, was that a lot of these children and youth don't really understand death because they don't understand life. So until they really know what life is about, it almost seems like death has become a sense of has become an expectation. Like they expect to die. They you had some families that expect that murder is supposed to happen in the family. So we got a lot of work to do until we can change these behavior mindsets and get them to understand that your life is valuable. You are valuable, and you know then maybe we can have some behavior change around violence and how we are affecting and traumatizing one another in our community. So I will continue to let Earth's legacy live by going out here speaking and helping young people and doing the best that I can to impact the community.
Kimberly, thanks so much. Those are very important words. I think we're about to go to break here very quickly and come right back. And we hear another clip from the film and come back to the conversation, go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Another thought I have about some of the things we just said and about some of the things that are featured in this film and what they say about what we could really be doing in this community. I'm going to throw these ideas out to our guests and to all of you at 410-319-8888. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This train. This train is a clean train. This train. This train.
All we hear church people say, they are in this holy way. There are strange things happening every day.
We went out with Sister Rosetta Thorpe. We came back with Sister Rosetta Thorpe. She was born on this day. She is an incredible woman. People don't realize the power she had. She was born in a place called Cotton Plant, Arkansas. Played with Cab Calloway, all the greatest. She was a gospel singer, and she influenced the sound of early rock and roll. She was called by many, in retrospect, the original soul sister, Sister Rosetta Thorpe. So we'll have her connected on our website. She is she had a huge influence on the sound of modern music, and not recognized really for who she was. Sister Rosetta Thorpe, happy birthday! She was born in 1915, no longer with us, of course, but. A very powerful voice. Talking about powerful voices, we're talking about Live Young Blood, the film by Bobby Marvin Holmes and Justin Gladner in studio featuring Kimberly Johnson, Kimberly Armstrong, who joins us by phone. 410-319-8888 is the number here. So do we have a clip queued up? What are we going to play? We're going to see what this is, and then we will put it right up so people can hear it. This is from Roberta's house, and we'll come right back to talk more. Stay with us.
Death. Because of violence is a violation of our human being spiritually and emotionally, that someone has taken the right of someone else's life, and it brings upon a lot more complication in the grief process. You know, what right does someone have to take my child's life? What right does someone have to take anybody's life?
So here's what Roberta's house is a special place all by itself. It's a place founded. Am I blocking her name?
Annette March Greer.
I don't know how I could forget. She was just on the show the other week.
Yes.
An incredible woman, Annette March Greer, from the March Funeral Home family. And the beauty is this family does give back to the community over and over again, whether it's their apples and oranges or this Roberta's house. They give back over and over again to this community to try to make it a better place in poor working class neighborhoods. And what Roberta's house does, it's a place where families who have suffered from violence can go to actually have therapy, to work out the issues that the family faces. They do really important work. I mean, Tyrone West family spent months there working out in a weekly session with Roberta's house. I mean, it's the power of that place. I'm glad you had her voice in this film.
Yes.
And one of the things I thought about with her voice and also with all the other folks you had in this film, David Miller and everybody else in the program, Upton Boxing Center and everything else that was there, was I thought about here are all these groups that are struggling just to survive.
Right.
People who mentor young people, who are working in our community, struggling day to day to kind of just make it and find the funds to keep open, and there's blood, sweat, and tears going into working with young people every day because that's what they believe in, and they're effective in their work because they love the kids, and the kids know they're loved, and they work at it. And I started thinking about, A, how to spread the philanthropic dollars in the city around so they touch more. There are a lot of programs out here that are run by mostly white people that do really good work, but that's not the point. The point is there's a lot of good work being done that is not recognized as well, that needs to have the funding. And what would we think about if we actually thought about how to restructure state and local money, that instead of just going to probation count and parole officers, actually goes to programs like this that work with children that could actually turn lives around. Thinking in a different paradigm, a different way of thinking about how we structure what we do.
Right, Mark, that is another takeaway from this film. That, you know, folks say it's nothing being done, there's a lot that's being done in Baltimore. It's just a matter of more money and more people getting involved. Mm-hmm. It's not a matter of it's not happening. I can name organization after organization, from the intersection to Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, folks on the ground that do great work in the community. It's just not enough funding for these communities, to be these community organizations to survive. That's the problem. Folks need to get involved and put their money where their mouth is and support these programs if you want to see real substantial change take place in the community. And yes, there is a question that needs to be had with our public officials, community organizers, and just everyday Joes on how can the money be invested in the community that benefits the community solely. So yes, Mark, you hit the nail right on the head.
No comment. I'm gonna be. The problem is, you know, like you said, no funding, man. When we were filming this documentary, we were gonna do a segment on that youth jail that was going to get built,
oh, yes.
that was slated to get built.
Right.
And we had both sides of the story, and both sides made a compelling argument. One side, of course, is saying you shouldn't be spending $120 million on building a new youth jail facility. And the other side said, well, look, kids are going to get locked up. And if they're going to get locked up, we should at least give them a better facility that has a lot more room for these programs and, like, hand in hand to be there and to help mentor these kids while they're there. And, of course, that got squashed. And I don't know where the money went. I'm not knowledgeable enough in that area. But the thing I always asked, I think Cameron Miles said it. He said, you know, if I had half a million, the things I could do.
Exactly. I mean, Cameron Miles, David Miller, Upton Boxing, these are places, Kimberly Armstrong's group are the places that need to be funded, mm-hmm. need to be funded to actually do the work right. on the ground that need to be done. Right. But before we run out of time, you talk about what's happening a week from Sunday and what you expect from the panel, the three of you, and what is happening a week from Sunday. Let's talk about that so we get that out there.
Olivia and Blood premiere screening DVD release at Creative Alliance. Doors open at 3:30. Film begins at 4 o'clock. Following the film, there will be a panel discussion featuring Kim Lee Armstrong, Imhotep Simba, the young man you heard from the clip in the documentary, as well as Munir Buhar from Core Community and Phil Lee from Johns Hopkins School of Public Health. And we're excited about this, Mark, because finally we get to get the DVD out there and share the message with the public. We really want to get into schools and just connect with community folks that, so as many youth as possible can see this film and spark change and discussion that's needed. Mm-hmm. So, yes, definitely. Next Sunday, March 30th at Creative Alliance, 4 o'clock is the screen. And come out and see Live Young Blood and get your copy.
And get your copy. This is an incredible film, and I'm hoping to see this in film festivals. It needs to be. I'm encouraging these two young men to get this film out to film festivals. People need to see this film. Two young documentarians from our community here in Baltimore who just have done an incredible job. I saw this film from the beginning when they put it out there, and they've worked and honed this film down to a 45-minute power-packed film that is the length it needs to be for people to really grasp and see what's going on. Powerful voices, really well shot, well edited, and that's what I think, and I'm sticking with it. And so you can catch the premiere and the DVD release of Live Young Blood a week from Sunday, March the 30th, at the Creative Alliance at Patterson. Doors open at 3:30. Film screening starts at 4. Panel discussion will follow the screening. More information, go to liveyoungbloodfilm.com. That's liveyoungbloodfilm.com. You can also log on to steinershow.org. We'll have the link there. And Bobby Marvin Holmes, Justin Gladden, Kimberly Armstrong, love the three of you very much. Thank you for being in the studio.
Thank you, Mark.
Great work you all have done. Great work.
Thank you.
You've added to our community, stepped it up.
Thank you.
We can take a very brief break. We're going to go out here with George Howard once again, who died on this day in 1998. Stepping out. And we come back with talking about stepping out. We're stepping up. Chauncey Whitehead's here with Miss Ernestine to talk about the coming up, the big walk on Saturday. CNN's going to be filming it and getting Baltimore fit. Stay with us.